sorry I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
It's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
But we ain't killing their army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, man, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, you guys, introducing Anna Diakin. She is the Nadine Strausen Fellow at the National Security Project at the ACLU. Welcome to the show. How's it going?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Very happy to have you on the show here. And so I'm wondering about the status of the American citizen, enemy combatant, reportedly captured in Syria, then held by American Special Operations Forces and I guess the CIA or I don't know, in Iraq. And then the latest I heard, they were going to turn him loose in Syria somewhere. Is that right?
Yes, that's what they're trying to do. So, yes, right now he's been held for over 9 months by the DOD at a military base in Iraq. And about 2 weeks ago, the government informed the court that it wanted to transfer him to Syria and release him there. And we're challenging that now because Syria is in a state of civil war and has been ravaged by it for years. And we think that any attempt to put him back in the middle of a war zone is unconscionable.
And he, according to them, and I guess you guys are representing him, so you can't confirm this or whatever, but according to them, he was captured on the battlefield fighting with the Islamic State. Is that correct?
That is not correct. He was captured while fleeing for his safety. And when he was picked up by the Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF. And when he was taken into their custody, he told them that he was American and that he was seeking the protection of America. And they got in touch with U.S. forces and turned him over to them.
I see. And so I'm sorry now because I forget when I interviewed the previous ACLU lawyer about this. I think at that point his name had come out, but I forget what it was. Can you remind me?
No, his name is still, we're under John Doe. We're continuing to operate for his safety.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I remembered that wrong. I was trying to think of that. Now, he's an American / Saudi citizen, dual citizen, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And so what about the argument of maybe they should just turn him over to the Saudis, or I guess the fear is that they would torture him and cut his head off?
The theory is that because the U.S. government now has custody over a U.S. citizen, that if they want to transfer him to another country, they need to, especially the custody of a foreign country, they need to have legal authority to do so. So basically, the U.S. government can't just take control over a person and then move them about the world. Usually this happens, for example, in the extradition context, like if Saudi Arabia, for example, or France or anywhere else wanted to charge him with a crime and the United States had a treaty with that country, then under the terms of that treaty, they may be able to transfer a U.S. citizen lawfully. But if there's no positive legal authority, so no statute or treaty that authorizes a transfer under those conditions, then the United States can't lawfully do it.
Well, and so do they have an extradition treaty with Saudi? And has he been charged in Saudi Arabia with anything?
He has not been charged with a crime anywhere, as far as we know. And I don't believe he has that there is an extradition treaty with Saudi Arabia. But right now they're trying to release petitioner into Syria.
Well, so what are the other choices here? Because it sounds like if they bring him back to the United States, he's going to have to go on trial for, I guess they don't ever really prosecute people with treason, but they could prosecute him for something, right? Giving material support to a terrorist group or something like that?
Mm-hmm. The government has alleged facts that he can be properly withheld as an enemy combatant. So they have three options. What they can do is they can continue to hold him as an enemy combatant, but defend that status in court. So say it's both legally and factually justified. Or they could charge him with a crime under U.S. law and bring him to the United States and give him a fair trial. Or finally, they could just release him. And what he's asking for, if they no longer wish to detain him, is a safe release, one that restores his liberty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I'm sorry, because I really should have studied up better about this, but I'm looking at the mm-hmm. CNN story now that says that he's denied that he ever fought with Islamic State and says he was just a journalist who came across the border.
Yes,
that's y'all's position. That's y'all's position.
Yes, he says that he was a journalist, and I can't comment generally on any of the specific allegations, but I can say that his position on the government's version of the facts is that they're riddled with inaccuracies and they're fundamentally misleading. In this case right now, though, we're not yet challenging their facts. When we're challenging currently the government's legal authority of whether or not they can lawfully hold someone, even accepting all of those facts as true. So mm-hmm. the government says that they can hold him under the 2001 and the 2002 authorizations for the use of military force, mm-hmm. which, as we all know, authorized the use of force against Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, the Saddam Hussein regime, and also ISIS did not even exist at the time. So even assuming...
Well, that's incorrect about Saddam. They got a new AUMF in 2002 for attacking Iraq. But anyway, go ahead.
So that the idea is that those in 2001 and 2002, ISIS did not even exist yet. And right. so war against ISIS could not possibly have been authorized under those statutes. And so if the United States wants to wage war against ISIS and wants to detain people as members of ISIS, that they need to seek authorization from Congress to do so.
Right. Well, and that's true, right? Iraq War III against the Islamic State, 2014 through 17, they really didn't even try to get an authorization for that, even though ISIS was a breakoff group from Al-Qaeda, not an associated force. It was Al-Qaeda in Iraq after they had stopped following the orders of Ayman al-Zawahiri, the leader of Al-Qaeda. So, and then, in fact, I think even then when they launched the war, I don't know if it was you guys took them to court or exactly what the context was, but they did try to invoke the authorization, the first AUMF from 2001, but they also tried to invoke the 2002 authorization for, as you mentioned, Saddam Hussein's regime, mm-hmm. which hasn't existed, of course, since 2003, mm-hmm. when they destroyed it. And they tried to invoke that. And, of course, they have been, if they've been invited into Syria at all by the Syrian government, it's secret. I mean, basically, they're in eastern Syria now as part of that same Iraq War III without the permission of the sovereign government of the country there, only with the permission of the unrecognized government of the of Syrian Kurdistan there. So really, I mean, I don't know. In other words, you seem to be really up against a political answer to a very careful legal question about the authorization to use force here. It's not the kind of thing that courts are usually very happy to get involved in, and yet they're blatantly in defiance of the Constitution and the law here.
We agree, and that is the thrust of our legal challenge right now. And the court, we had finished briefing on that very question, on whether those authorizations for the use of military force authorized this war and authorized detention of suspected members of ISIS. We completed that in March, and there was supposed to be a hearing this week on that merits question. But when the government announced that it intended to transfer Doe to Syria and then release him there, the district court postponed the hearing on the merits of our legal challenge until after this issue is resolved.
I see. And now, I'm sorry, because you may have made this clear when you talked about the three options the government has, but is there, ACLU demands a specific option to be taken here, that he should be brought back to the United States or something along those lines?
I think any of those three options would be consistent with the government's obligation. So the first would just be defend its ability, its legal authority, and its factual basis to hold him as an enemy combatant. So, let the marriage challenge proceed and get a ruling from the district court and maybe beyond about whether that's authorized. The second option, which Doe would welcome, is if they wanted to charge him with a crime in U.S. and try him in U.S. courts, he would welcome an opportunity to prove his innocence and have a fair trial. But so far, despite all of the government's allegations against him, it has opted not to do so. And in fact, because the government is now saying that it wishes to release him, we think that shows the weakness of the government's position and that they also do not consider him a threat. Because if they did think that he was a threat, they wouldn't be releasing him.
All right, hang on just one second. Hey, guys, here's who sponsors this show. Mike Swanson and his great investment advice at WallStreetWindow.com. He's actually posting some stuff at the Libertarian Institute website now. Really great stuff. The great Mike Swanson, and he's also the author of the book The War State, which is a really great history of the rise of the new right military-industrial complex after World War II in the Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy eras. You'll really want to look at it. The War State by Mike Swanson. Right. Yeah, apparently not. Or I guess it depends on who they think he's a threat to. So, I mean, because as you said, it's still an ongoing war there. So I guess kind of like I was saying there, this really is a political question as much as a legal one. So how do you guys at the ACLU measure that and how do you approach that? Because there comes a point where judges do what they're supposed to do politically rather than what the letter of the law says.
Well, we do actually think in this case it is a straight legal question. There are two statutes that the government's invoking. It's invoking its executive authority as well. And we think it's clear that both under those statutes and the Constitution that this isn't lawful. And those are the arguments we've made to the court. Now, it is very possible that in the meantime or at some point in the future, Congress will go back and they'll authorize this war against ISIS. But so far, we don't believe that it is lawful. And if it is not, then it can't detain him.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like an easy out for them. Would they just say, I mean, look, they made up the whole thing about Associated Forces anyway. Right. That's not in the AUMF. And yet they insist that the AUMF authorizes war against Al-Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb and Boko Haram and whoever they feel like. So I guess if they want, they can say that, well, ISIS used to be Al-Qaeda back when we called them Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And so that's associated. Shrug. Right.
Yeah, that is what the government's arguing. And their argument should be troubling to everyone because it essentially allows them to use these statutes that long predated this group to authorize war against new groups that would sprout up today, tomorrow, next year, that are loosely identified as terrorists, and then they can prosecute war against these people. And we think that really steps on Congress's area and it's an unconstitutional use of executive authority.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, can you talk to me real quick about this American who's suing because he's on the kill list and he's trying to get off the kill list? And I think a court said that suit can go forward for now. Is that right?
Yes, the court did say that. And so we'll see what happens with that. But I can't speak too much more to it right now.
Okay, but this is an American citizen, and can you tell me how he knows he's on the kill list? Did they admit in the Washington Post, like they did with Alaki, that this is what they're doing?
I'm sorry, I can't really speak to that case right now.
Okay, well, that's fair, because, yeah, business is business. All right, so is there anything important, anything else important about this alleged ISIS fighters case that I didn't know to ask you or we need to go over here?
I think just the bottom line is that everyone should be outraged by what the government is seeking to do to this American citizen. They, instead of defend their allegations against him, they are just, asking the court to allow it to put an American citizen out of the frying pan and into the fire, into a very dangerous situation, one from which he was fleeing for his life. And also because he doesn't have a passport or any way to leave the country, leaves him effectively trapped there. And we think this is no way for the government to treat its own citizen.
Yeah. Well, and we know, without knowing the details of what really is the story with this guy, we know that there were journalists who were kidnapped and murdered by ISIS, you know, held for a long time by Al-Qaeda and ISIS groups in Syria, in, you know, over the last few years. And so, you know, certainly an American citizen should always have the right to make their case. And get a fair hearing here. And kind of like you're saying, the fact that they want to release him would seem to indicate that they know they don't really have a case.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
That's correct.
All right. And now I know that you're in the National Security Department, but I just want to pass on the word that I speak for 300 something million Americans when I say that we really like it when the ACLU defends free speech for everybody, especially even the very worst of us. In order to protect that free speech right for everyone else. I know this is a controversy, and this is something that, you know, like, let's face it, there wouldn't be free speech in America at all if it wasn't for the ACLU. And so, you know, in the name of all y'all have ever done before in fighting for free speech, please don't change that. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Anna. I really appreciate it a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, guys, that is Anna Diakin. And she is the Nadine Strausen Fellow at the National Security Project at the ACLU. All right, you guys, and that's the show. You know me, ScottHorton.org, YouTube.com/ScottHortonShow, LibertarianInstitute.org, and buy my book, and it's now available in audiobook as well, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. Hey, it's endorsed by Ron Paul and Daniel Ellsberg and Stephen Walt and Peter Van Buren and Matthew Ho and Daniel Davis and Anand Gopal and Patrick Coburn and Eric Margolies. You'll like it. Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. And follow me on Twitter @ScottHortonShow. Thanks, guys.